Mr. Palmer, Real 7. We were talking about when you took over from the Buffs in at Green Hill in well, in front of Sedgenine in North Africa. And could you describe the observation post that you set up and the general situation as far as the relationship between where you were and where the Germans were?
Well, first of all, I should point out that the battalion headquarters was way back with the howitzers, and we had a little hillock. And there were signals, of course, and the odds and ends attached to the battalion headquarters, reserves and so on. And we had our little old dugouts, or whatever it might be, in the hillside there, because we were taking over from the Buffs who'd already got them there. We went into something that was ready made. The actual battalion headquarters was on a little hut up the bank. That was where the colonel was. But of course, during the day, if he got out of that, as far as I remember, it could, if he was not under observation from Green Hill itself, that he would be under observation from the air, because of course they were all the time during the day. Their recce planes were out.
So
we didn't see very much of our own aircraft at all at that stage.
So that was the battalion headquarters. Now, where was the actual battalion?
The battalion was up towards Green Hill, and I think it was C Company. The book will actually tell you there which company it was. Were just below Green Hill, a matter of maybe a mile away from the top of Green Hill, which was where the Germans had an observation post.
Was there a valley between the positions?
There was a valley between, yes.
So the Germans were on Green Hill.
And then it dipped and up, and then as it began to rise again, C Company was on in one of the tunnels up at, just below Green Hill.
And the battalion headquarters were behind that?
The battalion headquarters were behind that, and the best way, and practically the only way, if you crossed over country, you were in full view of the enemy, but you could travel up by the road. If you went up by dusk and in the morning, so that when you went up in the morning, you travelled up before first light. You travelled up, for instance, before stand two, so that you could get out into your slit trench, which again, as I said, was in front of the tunnel, about 100 yards in front. Just an open an open trench.
How deep?
About 3 feet. Possibly four. Certainly very shallow, because movement was very much restricted, and you would be out there from, as I said, before dawn until after dusk.
How many of you?
Well, the most of this particular trench would take would be two.
And What were you there to do?
To observe Green Hill.
There wasn't
the area just around, to spot any kind of untoward movement and record any movement that you saw. For instance, one of the things that used to happen, and he could be frequently spotted at dawn and sometimes at dusk, that Major Witzig would come out and stand up there and look across towards the positions. He would stand still for a few moments. He was a paratrooper officer, and then go back. But you see, when we got to the top of this hill, we knew that there was a certain amount of wreckage up there, and there were. Actually, after the campaign was over and we went up there, there were guns which had been blown up, and the bodies were still lying there of those who'd been killed.
How did you know it was Major Vitsik?
Because that was his reputation. It was that's the man that it was supposed to be, so we accepted that. He was obviously an officer who was used to command, and he was also an officer who suspected anyway, and knew quite easily that he could stand up there in perfect safety without anybody trying to blast him.
Now, wasn't it difficult to observe from when you were really under observation yourself? Because you were at a much lower level, weren't you?
Yes.
I mean, how did you manage it? Did you have camouflage of any sort over the position?
We had really nothing much, a little bit, yes. Possibly a little. I don't remember altogether what it was like. But I think it was fairly open. And of course, the trench would fill with water because we were often up there and it would be raining heavily at that time of the year. I mean, it was January, February. A lot of when you're standing in water all the time, which was quite hard. And you had to be extremely careful about any movement at all, because, as you pointed out to me, that you went, provided you kept down, it wasn't obvious that there was anybody there at all.
Did you use your binoculars?
Yes.
Couldn't they see the sun glinting on them, or did you have to be careful?
You had to be careful again with how you use.
And other than the officer you saw, could you see much of the German positions?
No, nothing at all.
Did you know where they were?
We had an idea, but no, beyond that, no. This is why, of course, this was a period where there were wreckages all the time that went out. And in the case of, we'd made them and the Germans made them, and in one case, a very high German officer was out, and he was captured. He was taken prisoner by a patrol. And at the same time, a patrol of the Leicesters had been out, and one of the Leicesters patrol had been wounded, and somehow he got left behind when the Germans came up on him, and he was taken back. And what the Germans did, they took this fellow and looked after his wounds, made sure what was the matter with him, and they got in touch with his commanding officer, told him exactly what they had done, and that they would be prepared to exchange him for the German officer that had been captured. I can't tell you what was the result of that now.
Now, when you were out there, was your dugout, your slit trench, did you have a phone line from there? Or a wireless link?
There wasn't a wireless link. There was. If I remember rightly, there was a line. We did have a telephone there. It didn't always happen, you see, on the forward observation post. But it wasn't all that far from company headquarters. The line, of course, could be.
How did you spend your day then, sat in water? And
well, you couldn't spend your day on anything at all except just staring out in front. If you were out on an observation post like that, you couldn't take your eyes off.
Both of you.
If there were two of you, you could take it in turns.
So while he was looking, what would you do?
Just sit.
Was that not boring?
Terribly boring.
Was there anything you could do to?
Well, you could take a book and read it, but that would cost a bit.
Is that what you did?
Sometimes, yes.
How did you feel? What was your when you were forward on these duties? I mean, what was your morale like when you knew you had to go forward and perhaps spend a whole day?
I think that I enjoyed it in a way because you were a master of your own destiny. You were entirely responsible for what you did. Nobody gave you orders, you ordered yourself. And if there were two of you of equal rank, this was what actually happened. And we were still, of course, in the I section, we were still privates.
And how often would you be on that duty? Was it every 3 days if there were six of you?
Yes, more or less.
Now, who were you remembered the name of your officer? It was Kaufman, as in the Labour politician. But you called him Kaufman, didn't you?
That's right.
Now, he'd gone by then. Could you just explain? We might as well go back to the officers. So, Kaufman.
Yes.
What did you...
Well, I think I mentioned to you before that he was not very happy with the job that he had. And he applied to go take over the rifle company. So, we got second Lieutenant Lindley.
Jeff Lindley.
Who came down from Oxford, later to be a clergyman, and I don't know whether he was training for the church at the time at the university or what, but I think that's where he was. He'd either recently left school or he was at the university himself.
And what was Lindley like?
And he was a very... a very pleasant officer, and he was liked by the other ranks. He had quite a sense of humour, and he took part in all the activities. This is the point, because he didn't keep himself remote from his men at all. You could get on with him, you could talk with him, and he would come in and have a chat. And he was a good officer, and he was with us all the way until we returned from Palestine and Syria. And then he went to brigade as the brigade officer.
Now, during this period in the line, when you weren't on observation post duty, what would you be doing? Back at battalion headquarters, I presume.
What we would be doing, actually, we were sufficiently undercover there, of course, to eat. And so we made quite a thing of, if you weren't on any particular duty, of getting the meals ready. There would always be something.
For the section or for the...
Well, there were the signalers there as well. It wouldn't just be for the section, because if you had a meal, there were 14-man compo boxes. These wooden boxes with your tea and your coffee and your bacon and margarine and whatever, egg powder, this sort of thing. All these things were in the 14-man compo box, so there were six in a section. Eight others would join you. If you were lucky, you got... You would have a certain number of boxes saying how many men have you got to deal with. There are the boxes for those. So sometimes you were lucky, you got a little bit more. This was always the luck of the draw.
Now, you'd normally mess in with the signalers then?
We messed in with the signalers.
How many of them?
Know them well.
How many signalers would there be?
At the battalion headquarters? There would be two at least, probably.
So that's a dozen at the headquarters and two out at it with each company. Mm. And so you'd sort of mess in with them as a rule, or those that were there.
You were already interviewed one of the signal sections. We probably mentioned that to you. He would know more about that than I
did. Now, when you... How would you go about cooking? I mean, what level of sophistication did you manage to attain?
A fire. You would have a wood fire.
You could light a fire.
Light a fire, but you have to be ready as soon as aircraft is about to stamp that out quickly. You learn ways of getting rid of that in a few seconds. And perhaps the meal we go to pot. But apart from that, we enjoyed these 14-man concrete boxes because it was the first time since we had left England that we had proper rations.
And what sort of meal would you prepare? What could you do with the compo rations?
Oh, well, you could cook it up in mess tins, or some other tins that were provided perhaps with the boxes that came up that had been full of supplies. Some of your biscuits. I remember Breezy Burton's from Blackpool, Burton's biscuits. They were terrible. It was hard as nails.
And what was the main staple of the food? Was it basically bully and
bully? Yes, bully beef. For the main meal.
So stew.
For stew, yes. And you could make a reasonable stew with it. I think we had certain tins of vegetables. So that in the box you can get quite a reasonable supply.
So that's one thing you'd do when you were back. What other duties would you have? Would you have any intelligence duties, intelligence section duties, while you were...
Yes, we would be, in order to keep you busy, your sergeant, if he was on the ball, he would, and he was free, he wasn't being occupied elsewhere.
This is Sergeant Fenwick.
Sergeant Fenwick, yes.
He'd give you what? Sorry, I interrupted.
He'd give you certain little jobs to do, either to take that area of map, take the Green Hill area of the map and make a three-dimensional one from the map.
A model?
Yes. And that, well, a drawing, to work it out by drawing, this kind of thing. So that if you had to make reference to any point or other, you could show it, for instance, from your drawing of the hill and say, oh, well, it's there on that particular point.
And what was the officer doing in the intelligence section? I mean, what would he actually do?
He was keeping contact with his brigade. His work was concerned with keeping the battalion in touch, going round to the companies and finding out what the position was with the companies. And what their needs might be and what they've seen. In other words, getting the reports from the companies. Of course, the companies had their own observation posts. It was just that from the point of view of battalion headquarters, they wanted to have one out there that could give the broad picture from the point of for the colonel.
Would there be a map or a map room? There wouldn't be a room, perhaps, but the intelligence section would keep up to date with the positions of the companies and the other units.
That sort of thing, yes. Yes, that was usually the sergeant could do that. Any member of the section would be able to do that.
And where would that map be? Would that actually be with...
Well, that was in this little hut that I mentioned, which was no bigger really than this area here.
About 8 foot square, or something?
Yes, just a sort of farm-out building it was. And what used to happen, you see, I did this on a number of occasions. When I was on, you would travel back at night after you'd been out there, and particularly a ghastly day, probably just snow and sleet, and you'd go back and you'd report. If you had nothing to report, all right. If you did have something to report, well, it was important that whatever it might appear to be. And I can remember going back on one day after this, feeling pretty wretched inside, I suppose. I don't know, it must have appeared so to the colonel anyway, because when he called me in and I gave my report, he said, could I offer you a rum? I said, well, thank you very much. He said, usually this was kept for the officers on special occasions. All right, special occasion here as one of your men coming, looking absolutely bedraggled. And he said, right, so he gave me this tot of rum. Now, of course, it's neat stuff, and it was the proper stuff, isn't it? So I gave my report, and I drank the rum, and I was just feeling just nicely sort of settled. Managed to stagger out of my dugout, and as soon as leaving the hut, of course, you're going into a change of atmosphere. Went down, crawled into the dugout, and must have gone fast asleep within seconds, because I didn't wake up until the following morning. I was as fit as a fiddle, which just shows that alcohol can do its stuff.
Now, when you made such a report to the colonel, what would you have to report? Because you said you very rarely saw any. You couldn't see where the enemy were.
You couldn't see a whole lot, but you had to report if anyone had been in touch with you. If you reported anything back to the company, probably there would be a member of the company who would be out with you on the observation post anyway. And he would report back to his company. And this was the kind of thing that you do now.
Now, what a few other things. What about company latrines at the headquarters? Did you have any of them? What pattern were they?
The latrines.
Or the latrine area, perhaps it might be more.
I don't even remember the latrine area. Green Hill. They, of course, were members of headquarter company. Those people who built the latrines. I can't remember now where the latrines were.
Were you able to keep clean? Was the water sufficient water to say wash and change?
What you had to do on in the line, of course. I think that all that they would be able to do in the way of a latrine up there in the line is just to dig a trench, if I remember rightly, and you would possibly have some seating or stand over the line, and that was it, and that would be covered up when we left, and it would be sufficiently far away from, obviously, from the position, so that you didn't get in or didn't get in the food or anything like that.
Now, what I meant was, were you able to keep washed and clean? Were you able to shave in the front line?
What you had to use was the water would come up. You would get supplies of water built up by a water carrier, and you would have, therefore, some that you could put into your mess tin, and you would use your mess tin in order to get cleaned up.
Was there any problem with lice?
Oh, well,
at that
time, you had to have frequent inspections, the MO. We carry those out very frequently. If you were in your line for a time, quite obviously, it was much more difficult to keep clean than anywhere else.
So you spent this period, now, for about 2 or 3 months, through into March, I think, it was all fairly quiet.
It was all fairly quiet, but of course the rumbling was in the distance. You could hear the battle from the south going on, the rumblings and the rest of it. But it was just quiet on that front.
Now, then, round about just before the 1st of March, you were pulled back. And then they met to another line, and the Germans attacked. Well, they attacked the 2nd, 5th Sherwood Foresters. At
yes.
Sedgeny. What do you remember of this period? Because it's quite a confused period.
Well, what I remember is before this took place, we were sent back for a rest.
The whole battalion?
No, just a few. I can't tell you whether it was a whole company. I think it possibly could have been a whole company. We were sent back in a reserve company taking over from them. And we were sent back to, I think apart from the, I don't think our sergeant was there. And I don't know whether the whole other section was there, but the group anyway was sent back to Sedgemoor. And we were in the station area, And of course they had the anti-tank, the Bofors guns were back there, for, in case there was an air attack. There was a small little space for the wounded that had been taken there out of the line, and there were fewer where I was there, and suddenly this Frenchman comes back. We spot this Frenchman, you see, coming back on his own, and he is cross-questioned, and says, of course, the Germans are coming, but whether this happened before or after, I think it will probably be after we were raided. So half a dozen aircraft came over and dive-bombed us.
What was that like, to be under that?
Well, this was my first experience of being dive-bombed. And it was quite horrifying. And we were in this tobacco factory, because it was a tobacco factory. So
that's where you'd been pulled back to.
That's where we'd been pulled back to. And, of course, we had been told immediately, wherever you were, get down against the walls and pile in there. So, of course, once the raid started, and the boat was guns opened up, and they were dropping the bombs, here we get, he goes, never mind about singly, dive on top, you know, anything, you just move there. Split second, you had enough sense to do that. And there was usually someone there who was quick on the draw and knew exactly what was happening. So, of course, afterwards, actually, they hit the regimental aid post.
Did any
sad, considering they were already wounded. I don't know what casualties they had.
Did any bombs land near you?
Well, within 50 yards. Small stuff. I don't think there was anything terrible.
Did the sirens affect you? If there were Stukas, did the sirens affect you at all? The noise of it all.
I can't remember now whether they were Stukas or not, or whether they were Messerschmitts.
How did it compare to? I mean, you've been under shellfire. We haven't actually touched on it. How did it compare to being under shellfire?
Well, at that particular period, I don't remember being under shellfire.
So far, you've been lucky. So that this was your first time under proper fire.
Yes.
How nervous were you, or were you nervous at all? I mean.
Well, I know that Jack Furley was nervous because he'd been on that observation post I mentioned previously, Green Hill, and they'd opened up on it. I don't remember them opening up where I was on there. They may have done, but anyway, Jack was a first, and of course they dived out of it. So that is another point about knowing where either they covered that one up and made another one after this had happened. That was quite a terrifying experience, yes, but the point is when there are a whole lot of people there, that's where it's comfortable, perhaps, for people to be around. Because if you were on your own, it's much more easy, maybe, to panic than it would if there were a whole group.
So when you were under a dive bomb attack, or you were attacked by the... There were quite a lot of you, so you weren't so nervous?
No, I don't remember it. It just one or two hysterical laughs. It only lasted a few seconds.